Evernorth Health Services, we believe costs shouldn't get in the way of life-changing care. And we're doing everything in our power to make it possible. Behavioral health solutions that also keep your projections at their best? It's possible. Pharmacy benefits that benefit your bottom line? It's possible. Complex specialty care that cares about your ROI? It's possible. Because we're already doing it. All while saving businesses billions. That's Wonder made possible. Learn more at evernorth.com/wonder.
With threats to our nation waiting around every corner, adaptability is more important than ever. When conditions change without notice, quick strategic thinking is crucial. And with obstacles consistently impending, determination is essential in overcoming them. It's this willingness, decisiveness, and resilience that sets Marines apart. With our fighting spirit, we don't just fight battles, we win them. Marines are the constant our nation counts on to fight the unknown. And through adaptable problem solving, we do just that. Learn more at marines.com.
Gators Breakdown. The Gators Fan Podcast. Because there's never a dull moment in Gator Nation.
The Gators Breakdown Podcast is ready to go. I'm your host, David Waters, and you can find me on Twitter at GatorDave_SEC. And Florida announced last week the schedule for spring practice, and football is back on March the 12th. And joining me to preview our first part of spring practice is Will Miles, and you can find him on Twitter at WillMilesSEC and his site, readandreaction.com. Will, just mentioned spring practice starts off March 12th, first of 4 days that will be open to the public, and hey, football will be back live and in color pretty soon.
Man, it barely feels like it ended because last year we didn't have a bowl game and the season was pretty much over by the time McElwain got fired. And this year they're playing in a New Year's Day bowl game, and then you got signing day, and a month later we're back there out on the field. So it has seemed like a much more compressed offseason this year, that is for sure.
Yeah, big events. Yeah, it does with coaching changes and recruiting, like you said, signing day and falling to 2020 class. Yeah, everything just kind of flies by. As I mentioned, March 12th is the opening of spring practice, and there's other dates that are open to the public as well, March 14th, 23rd, and 27th. Each open practice will be held at the Sanders Practice Fields. In Florida announced that bleachers will be set up on the east side along the indoor practice facility. So, Will, it is a much different feel than a year ago when we really didn't know what to expect. And now expectations a year later are already a bit high with a lot less questions, but still some important ones as we get our spring preview started.
Yeah, very much so. I mean, I think it's always a new team, always a new year. You know, what you did last year doesn't necessarily mean much of anything this year, except for maybe the insight that it gives you into what you might be looking for during the spring practices, during the spring game, and then as you get into fall camp. So, you know, it's an exciting time. I'm sure these guys have enjoyed the offseason where they've gotten a lot of praise as opposed to last year where they didn't get much at all. And, you know, so it'll be interesting to see what Mullen decides to do this year as opposed to some of the things that he did last year.
All right, before we get started, remember you can find Gators Breakdown on newsforjax.com/GatorsBreakdown. There you'll find all the Gators Breakdown episodes, and I recently posted one today of the Carson Beck commitment to Georgia. So if you haven't checked that out yet, go check that out. A lot of good insight from Denny Thompson. He is the quarterback trainer for one Carson Beck, and definitely shed a lot of insight on the recruitment of Beck and why he may have chose Georgia over Florida. And some really good insight as well on Anthony Richardson, the quarterback target for Florida. And hey, even some insight, I'll get into it later with Felipe Franks and the Emory Jones quarterback competition. But you can find that episode at newsforjax.com/GatorsBreakdown, as well as iTunes, Google Play, YouTube, and Spotify. When using those services, please share, rate, and review the show. Subscribe on all those platforms and on social media. Follow Gators Breakdown on Twitter and Facebook at Gators Breakdown. Will, before we get into the spring, I just mentioned the Carson Beck commitment to Georgia. Had an episode on it. We won't spend a whole lot of time on it, but you did release an article as well. Your initial thoughts and we'll let people go to readreaction.com to read the article.
Yeah, you know, I never really get too upset about one recruit and particularly after what I've been writing the last couple of weeks where, you know, basically once you get outside of the top 50, it doesn't really make a whole lot of the rate that guys pan out becomes a lot less. This is more just reflective of the symptom that Georgia is really dominating on the recruiting trail. And, you know, they've got 18 5-stars they've signed over the last 4 years, 58 4-stars versus 0 5-stars and 54 stars for Florida. So that's quite a talent gap that Dan Mullen's going to have to make up. I think you can make an argument that he develops his players better than some other coaches out there, and certainly maybe we'll even develop those players better than Kirby does. But at the end of the day, if the guy's already a developed product when he shows up on campus, it's going to be hard to beat. You know, you want to be it, – it's not a good thing to have one hand tied behind your back when you go into that Georgia game every year. And at some point, this is going to have to turn around. They're going to have to bring in those guys. And a guy in Jacksonville who's a high-level recruit is a guy you never want to leave, never want to let leave. You never want to let him leave to go, you know, to Indiana, but you sure as heck don't want to let him leave to go to Georgia. And I think that's where people sort of get a little bit concerned, just that a high-level Jacksonville guy who had really been leaning Florida from everything that we had heard over the last, you know, over the last month or so, all of a sudden goes up to Athens and decides to go there. But, you know, again, it's one recruit. You never get too upset about. Congratulate the guy to go where he wants to go, and hopefully we beat him in the coming years.
Yeah, absolutely. So as we said, you can go to readreaction.com, read Will's thoughts there, and an episode that I posted earlier today as well. So let's start. Spring football preview here. Well, last week there was a lot of talk about the quarterback position from a couple different places, Will. Dan Mullen, in a speaking engagement, said it was an open competition for the quarterback position. And then this got the ire of Gator Nation here. Bleacher Report releases an article that was picked up by Paul Feinbaum, where they list Florida as having one of the toughest quarterback situations heading into the 2019 season. So I guess with those two items, we can ask a question to which I think we already know the answer in. Is Felipe Franks, or should he be the starting quarterback at Florida? I say yes for me, as I expect him to progress even more. If he does it, then things could get interesting.
Yeah, I mean, I guess you always play the guy who gives you the best chance to win so that you maintain credibility with your team, because you wouldn't tell the left tackle, oh, we're going to play the freshman because we want to see him develop, if you've got a junior left tackle who can play. Just like you wouldn't play the junior if the freshman was beating him out. I think you play the guy who goes out there and allows you to win the game. And the same thing should happen here. I mean, if Emory Jones comes out and just outplays Franks in spring camp, fall camp, and then maybe they split reps to start with and he's just playing better, you got to play him. But at the same time, if they're even, I think Franks has shown that he can win some games for Florida. Now, certainly there were some hiccups in there as well. And, you know, that South Carolina game, there was sort of the whole game sort of turned on a play where he threw the ball into traffic. If that ball gets intercepted, maybe the whole season looks different. So, you know, last year's quarterbacking performance was much, much, much better than it was the year before, but it wasn't Heisman Trophy worthy. And if you think you've got somebody in Emory Jones who has that kind of capability and he wins the competition, I mean, I think you let him play. But again, it's a competition, and it should be an open competition at every spot. And I think that's kind of what Mullen's saying is, you know, the Gator standard is that you're going to compete for your spot, and, you know, nothing's given to you and you're going to have to earn it. And Franks is going to have to go out and earn it just like he did last year. And certainly he earned maybe having the lead going into the spring, but you can't just rest on your laurels. He's going to have to get better. And the same thing with Emory Jones. He's going to have to get better too.
Yeah. I don't want to, you know, make it look like or sound like we're in this podcast trying to create a quarterback controversy, you know, because I didn't even honestly think about it a whole lot till Mullen had those comments. And now, you know, just a week later, and I had Denny Thompson on, I'll get into, you know, about the Carson Beck commitment and what everything that he brought up in this competition too. But to kind of go back to Mullen's comments, you know, is it to keep the quarterback room on their toes? You know, everybody who's involved, you know, you don't want Franks or Emory disinterested if they know they're not the guy. You know, keep it's that's one way of looking at some of those comments that Dan Mullen threw out there. But, you know, as far as the Bleacher Report article and listing the quarterback situation tough right now, I can't go that far with a lot of those other teams that were also listed on that list. I mean, you had FSU and you had Miami and you had Penn State, teams who don't even know who their starter is. They only have one option at quarterback. You know, Florida, is it tough in a way? Yes, if you believe there is a true quarterback competition, but comparatively speaking to those other schools, it's not even close. Heck, I'd even say Georgia has it tougher right now in 2019. If Jake Fromm goes down, where do they go but behind him? So that Bleacher Report article, and I know a lot that really caught Gator Nation because Paul Feinbaum featured it, really caught the attention of Gator Nation. But, you know, I don't see it right now. Could it get to that point where it's tough if Frank struggles, if he's the starter and he struggles and Mullen has to turn to another quarterback? Sure. But, you know, we've seen Mullen is going to give Frank's or maybe whoever the starting quarterback is a long leash. And, you know, what Frank did toward the end of last season warrants consideration in there not really being a quarterback battle. And this is Frank's job to lose.
Yeah, well, I mean, Franks took quite a step forward when you looked at how he played, you know, in that second half against South Carolina and then how he played against Florida State and certainly how he played against Michigan. But, I mean, he didn't throw over 200 yards, I don't think, in any game during the year. So it wasn't as if he was lighting up scoreboards. But, again, he's got an enormous amount of ability. He's only a junior. So it's not as if you're trying to make a decision where you're playing for the future here instead of – and I don't know. I heard what Denny said on the podcast earlier today. And, you know, the reality is if Emory Jones were to transfer because Frank's played, he's got to sit out a year. So you're just sort of wasting a year. He's already had his redshirt year. So, maybe that's true, but I don't necessarily see that either. I think maybe what you see here is what we thought we were going to see coming into 2018, which is Felipe Franks is the starter, but Emory Jones sort of spells him a lot like Tim Tebow did in 2006. And that's something that, you know, Mullen has experience doing, has done. He certainly doesn't have to shy away from using Emory Jones because he doesn't have to be worried about burning a redshirt year. I mean, he's already used the redshirt at this point. So, you know, I can envision a scenario where you bring in Emory Jones and in some respects to prevent Franks from taking the beating that he took last year, because Franks ran a lot last year. And towards the end of the year, you could see there were a couple of times in the South Carolina game, especially where he had taken a pretty decent hit. And, you know, if you don't want to expose your throwing quarterback to that, then you bring in the guy who's got a little bit better running ability, have him come in, have him supplement, certainly have him play once you get ahead. And, you know, there were a bunch of games last year where Franks was still in the game when they were up by, you know, 40 points. I don't think that'll happen this year. I think once they get up big in some of those cupcake games and maybe even, you know, the game against Tennessee is a good example. That game last year is a place where Emory Jones this year will come in and play.
Yeah, I think going and looking, what was it? The Vanderbilt game where he had 284 yards was the only SEC opponent over 200. I'm looking for it now. Yeah, it was the only SEC opponent over 200 yards. Mississippi State, 219. There we go. Kentucky, 232. So, yeah, you know, a few games there, 254, you know, against FSU there. But, I mean, yeah, there's a lot of people are going to – Franks is going to have his detractors, and I think that's just the natural part of the first season that he started under Jim McElwain, and a lot of people can't forget that and, you know, didn't blow the doors off of the last year. But as we know, I've defended him a whole lot and him getting better. So, yeah, you know, you Denny bringing up and, you know, the whole – you know, the whole Emory Jones maybe transferring or Felipe Franks even transfer, whoever doesn't win the job, that may transfer away here. And that Mullen would maybe have to make a choice because, you know, Emory expects to play and compete for the starting job. And Emory may not want to wait. And with the way quarterbacks transfer and get eligible right away, sometimes it seems like, you know, that maybe he thinks about transferring. And, you know, I think that's a big risk if you wanted to leave in that fashion. But, you know, it brings up a good point in that Mullen may have to make a decision for 2019 in which quarterback gives the best chance to win and which one would Mullen not want to lose.
You know, I think so. I think, though, that the coach has the ability to speak to each of these guys and understand what makes them tick and understand what they want. And certainly that goes into the decision-making process, but you can't let it guide your decision-making process. I mean, you got to put out the guy there that everybody wants to ride with. I mean, if everybody sees that Franks is playing better in spring practice and then Emory Jones is starting, well, it's going to be a problem. So you got to put the guy out there that you think gives you the best shot to win. And, you know, again, I think we need to say, okay, what are reasonable expectations? So Franks went from one of the worst quarterbacks in the SEC in 2017 to an above average quarterback in 2018. That is a significant leap. Now, to see the leap from above average to elite, that's two straight years of making significant leaps. I'm not sure that's a reasonable expectation. I mean, I think slightly better than last year, about equivalent to last year, that's probably a reasonable thing. I don't know that you always see giant leaps. I think a lot of times what you see is sort of the small things. So, you know, audibling out of bad plays and, you know, looking a guy off that he didn't look off last year, or not throwing into double coverage and throwing into single coverage instead. Those sorts of little things are going to be more difficult to see and aren't necessarily as obvious and aren't always going to show up in the stat sheet, but certainly help the team win. And I think those are sort of the things that we should be looking for in 2019. And I think Franks showed enough growth that you think he's going to be able to show that again, or at least significant growth in some of those smaller areas. But, you know, there was a lot of room to improve. There was some low-hanging fruit coming out of 2017, and the low-hanging fruit is gone. And so it's going to be interesting to see whether he can improve. But, you know, I think at the end of the day, you have to take into account what someone may end up doing from a transferring perspective and roster perspectives and things like that. But, you know, you got to play the best guy.
Yep, I think he progresses enough to be the guy. Now, what happens during the season? I think he's okay, and I think we'll see Emory Jones in 2020. That's my the way I see it working out right now. So, you know, it could not happen that way, but we'll see how it all shakes out. Then let's move to the next position, Will, in running back. And the question I'd like to ask here is, of course, kind of obvious here, but who emerges as the second running back if Malik Davis is fully recovered? Damian Pierce came in and averaged 6.1 yards per carry as a true freshman, but we saw his numbers of carry goes down as the season went on when Jordan Scarlett and LaMichael Pirine, who's coming back, led the way there, and you had Franks and Tony getting more carries as well. So, you know, let's not forget Malik Davis in a not-so-friendly 2017 season and an offensive system as well that wasn't so friendly. And, of course, the coaching that was going on there, you know, had a season about like Damian Pierce had, with just a hair more production before getting injured. Pierce in 2018 had 69 carries, 424 yards, 6.1 yard average, and 2 touchdowns. Malik Davis in 2017, 79 carries, so he had 10 more carries, 526 more yards, so about 100 yards more, 2 touchdowns. So, you know, very similar stats there with Malik Davis, you know, if you wanted to just go by stats there, you know, a little better stats there. So, you know, I think it's safe to say if Florida can feel comfortable going 3 deep at running back and maybe even more with Clement and right back there as well. But if it plays out like last season and it's a pair of backs that get the bulk of the carries, who's the second back behind Pirine that would be that player, Davis or Pierce? And I'm pretty torn on this because going back to last year and previewing the season, when Malik Davis is healthy, he's a lethal player at running back.
Yeah, I mean, I think this probably boils down to pass protection. I mean, just like it almost always does for the running back. So whoever's going to do a better job at pass protection is the guy who can be in there on second down when you decide when it's either or, right? And then if they can't pass protect, they can't be in there on third down because they may have to pick up a blitz. So those are the kinds of things, I think, especially if we're talking about what are you looking for in the spring game. I mean, I'm not necessarily looking for Malik Davis to get 10 carries in the spring game. What I'm actually looking for is how do they use him and Iverson Clement in the passing game. Yeah. So, you know, when you think about how Mullen used Rainey and Demps, when you think about even how he used Harvin out of the backfield, you know, Clement especially is somebody who has shown an ability to catch the ball, a redshirt freshman now. So, again, you don't have to worry about burning a redshirt. You can try some things. They started to be a little bit more multiple in terms of what they were doing on offense. I think it took them 8 or 9 games last year to get to the point where they actually had 2 running backs in the backfield at the same time. And now they're going to be able to pull that out day one and start working on some of those things in year 2 under Mullen. So I'm really interested to see how he uses the running backs in the passing game and whether we see any of that stuff in the spring practices and in the spring game, because I think he's got some weapons in the passing game that maybe he didn't have last year. I know Malik Davis 2 years ago was really the only consistent threat out of the backfield. I mean, Jordan Scarlett didn't catch the ball that much. LaMichael Pirine didn't catch the ball that much. And Davis was the guy who was sort of the running back.
Scarlett missed the whole year.
Well, yeah, that too. But 2 years ago, I guess he didn't have it. So it's been a long day, Dave. But yeah, so Davis was the main threat out of the backfield when it came to catching the ball. And I think Davis and Clement are the guys I'll be looking for in the spring.
And to go to that point as well, look what we saw the last time the Gators played a football game. And LaMichael Pirine's out there catching tunnel screens. So you give Mullen the time and the weapons that he has there. And you know, can you see a Clement? Can you see a Malik Davis in that similar role that you saw what they unearthed in bowl practice with LaMichael Perine.
Yeah, well, I mean, it's going to be very interesting to see all those little wrinkles. And I don't expect to see a bunch of those wrinkles during the spring game, especially after what we saw last year. But I do expect you to be able to see some things from a formation perspective and, some of the things they may have been working on with some of these guys. And we'll get into that when we talk about the tight ends a little bit too, I'm sure. But, I think at the end of the day, it's going to be pass protection and it's going to be the ability to catch the ball out of the backfield that differentiates these guys. I think they're all pretty good running backs. I think Davis showed a couple of years ago that when the offensive line play breaks down, he has the ability to get a first down. Perine was a little bit less 2 years ago, but obviously once he got ahead of steam last year, it was very, very effective. So I think it's sort of symbiotic, right? If the offensive line is able to give him a head start, I think Perine can be really, really effective in some of those spaces and Pierce as well. But if you need somebody with a little bit of wiggle, then maybe Davis is the guy who takes that backup role if the offensive line is struggling at all.
All right, let's move to the wide receivers here. And, Will, everyone returns. I mean, but the question I have is, can one stand out from the pack? Van Jefferson led the way, but not by a wide margin. 35 catches, 503 yards, 6 touchdowns. Not quite, but quietly not too far behind was Josh Hammond. 28 catches, 369 yards, 4 touchdowns. Then Trevon Grimes, 26 catches, 364 yards with only 2 touchdowns. Kadarius Toney, 25 catches, 260 yards and only 1 touchdown. And Thomas Goldkamp released an article detailing Grimes and his production and how it rose in the second half of the season. And the quote from that is, in the first 6 games of the season, he recorded just 11 catches for 129 yards and 1 touchdown. And then it was after a pretty productive spring and fall camp. But it wasn't really for lack of targets either. Grimes was targeted 16 times in those games. However, through his targets increased down the stretch, what really stood out was that quarterback Felipe Franks and Grimes simply connected on more of those targets. So Thomas goes on to say, in each of the last 6 games, Franks targeted Grimes at least 3 times. In fact, he averaged an extra 1.3 targets per game in the second half of the season. Paid off for the Gators as Grimes racked up 15 catches for 235 yards and a touchdown. So, encouraging there. But, looking at what Grimes did in the second half of the season, Van Jefferson was the number one guy. There's no doubt about it. But, stats didn't really necessarily jump out and scream at you that he was the number one guy. So I'm not entirely sure Mullen's system's designed for one guy to jump out. But we all know and hope Trevon Grimes and Kadarius Toney can become more of impact players. But Will, as much as Dan Mullen likes to run the ball and when, especially when they're having success in the sheer numbers Florida has at the position, it's going to be difficult for one guy to break out.
Yeah, I mean, I think Grimes is the guy that you look at and say he's the difference maker. I think Toney, there seem to be some limitations. I mean, when they ran some end-arounds, he would get caught. He's able to go from 0 to 60 pretty quickly, but his 60 isn't anywhere near as fast as Grimes or even Cleveland. And maybe that's the other guy that we should be looking for, is not necessarily in the spring, but Cleveland is the guy who's got the deep speed, clearly against Tennessee a couple years ago, was able to show that. And so, if Franks gets a little bit more accurate on some of those deep balls, maybe Cleveland can take advantage. I mean, you mentioned they're all back, but that also means that, Jefferson Sr., Grimes Jr., Cleveland Sr., Toney Jr., Hammond Sr., Swain Sr., the only guy in spring camp who's young is Copeland. So that's the guy I'm going to be looking for in spring camp. And also, the idea that I'm interested to see who they have returning punts and who they have on special teams, just because, I think that tells you a lot about what they think about their depth, right? That if they put somebody back there, if they put Copeland back there, then, hey, they're giving him a shot to do that. But if they don't have Copeland back there, maybe they decide to give the punt returns to Toney, or maybe they decide to give that to even Grimes, put somebody back there because you're not concerned about an injury because you feel like you have enough depth. So maybe that's one of the things we should be looking for from the wide receiver position is who do they have back there for that sort of for those sort of things.
Well, yeah, it's kind of going to something maybe I'll shed light on next week when we do the defense. And punt returns, but if they feel good about depth and defensive back, put Christopher Henderson back there one time.
Well, he certainly got the speed to break it. And again, the difference maker. I mean, it's one of the things last year where Whenever Freddie Swain went out with an injury, they really struggled, even just catching the ball back there. And it doesn't matter if the guy can run run 100 miles an hour if he can't catch the punt. So, you know, Swain was really steady back there, and I think he did a pretty good job. Obviously, returned one, I think, for a touchdown. But more than anything, not killing him on field position, not letting the ball drop and bounce for 30 yards in the wrong direction. Very rarely were those mistakes made on punt returns. You know, a few years ago with Antonio Callaway, I mean, he would return one for a touchdown, the next time he'd fair catch it at the two, and you just never really knew what you were going to get. And Swain was really consistent last year. So maybe that's what Mullen's looking for, is consistency on special teams, not necessarily explosion. And again, I think that's something we'll see. And yeah, we'll get into that with the defense a little bit too. But you know, I think who they have on special teams says a lot about what they think about their team and what they think about their depth. You know, both from a punt return and a kickoff return team, but also from a punt block and a kick block team. You know, who do they have on there? I mean, Chris Rainey, you know, very much was participating in those special teams all the time. Urban Meyer was famous for that, right? Having the starters playing on the special teams, but you can only do that if you've got a backup who can spell them if something happens on one of those plays. So, you know, the nice part is Mullen is starting to build up the depth, and I think we'll start to see that this spring.
Well, do you think it's a big factor if there's not I don't know how much they'll harp on it in spring, you know, but we won't get to see it in a spring game, of course, but in those open practices and, you know, the scrimmages that, you know, we won't get to see. Do you think it's a big deal if there's not a true number one? I mean, with Jefferson, his numbers could have been a little bit better. We saw plenty of times where he was open down the field and Felipe Franks, you know, couldn't hit him down the field for some of those big plays there. So he did seem like the most consistent threat to do something. But I think with the encouraging signs of the offense last year and not really one guy breaking up, I don't think it's too big of a deal. But I think when it's clutch time, when it's crunch time, that guy will keep getting those catches, and maybe Florida finds themselves in that position. And, you know, coming through spring, maybe it's about finding that one guy who can do that in those situations.
Yeah, I mean, maybe so. I think – you know, those really good Florida teams back in 2006 and 2008, you knew they were going to give the ball to Percy Harvin, and it didn't matter because Harvin was going to just bust it to the house anyway. I mean, you could double team him, you could gang up on him when they had him back behind the line of scrimmage and were handing the ball to him or direct snapping to him. It didn't matter. He was so gifted, he could take it to the house regardless. I don't know if they have a guy like that on the roster right now, at least that we've seen. Maybe Grimes can be that guy, but, you know, if you have to hit a guy 30 yards downfield to have a big play, inevitably those are going to be low percentage opportunities, even with the best quarterbacks in the SEC. You know, Franks is certainly making his way up, but I wouldn't say he's the best quarterback in the SEC. And so it's going to be a low percentage play to hit that. If you can just throw a little bubble screen to Grimes and he takes it to the house, well, all of a sudden now you got something you complete 70 or 75% of the time and turn it into that. So I think that's maybe the differentiator, not necessarily having a number one guy, but having a guy who, when he gets the ball in his hands behind the line of scrimmage, has the ability to make people miss and take it to the house. And if they can identify a guy who can do that on a consistent basis, or who can at least tilt the defense because they're afraid that that will happen, then all of a sudden it opens it up on the other side for some of these guys who've got some speed who may be going deep.
Yeah, and we brought it up on the last Gator panel as well. And I really think Kadarius Toney, you know, this is a time for him with spring practice, with these reps, with the quarterbacks. This is the time, you know, he made the move permanently to receiver a year ago. So now he's had that role under his belt for a year. How much has he learned from, you know, bowl practice to now coming up to spring practice? Has he practiced enough in this last, you know, month or last 2 months and now leading the spring practice? Hey, has he practice enough? Has he been in there enough to hone his skills as a wide receiver? Because we see the potential. We saw, and he even pretty green at the position, saw big plays that he made at times last year. So along with, you know, getting Jacob Copeland adjusted as well, but more is because he's a young guy and all these receivers that are coming back. I think the other question is just how better can Kadarius Toney be a wide receiver, and not just a playmaker, but a wide receiver.
Yeah, you know, the big thing was last year, very early in the year, he wasn't even on the field very much. He was only on the field when there was a specific package for him. And then later on, especially in the South Carolina game, I know that I noticed that he was active blocking. And so, you know, obviously he had started to pick up some of those things that Mullen was harping on mm-hmm. for his wide receivers, you know, where you don't get on the field if you don't block. And so as he picked that up later in the year, he got on the field a lot more and was able to be more of a weapon. And that didn't mean they didn't use him early in the year. It just meant that you knew the ball was basically going in his direction if he was on the field. And against South Carolina, they really used him as a decoy until they finally hit a reverse there on that last drive. So I think that, again, I don't know how much of that you'll see in the spring. But certainly, just that advance in terms of his ability to play the position, I think is significant going through last year. And I think if he continues to show that, then he'll be on the field a lot more and will be able to be more of a weapon. So, I don't know. I mean, again, he's one of those guys who you hope you can throw a screen pass and he can take to the house, that you can start setting those sorts of things up. Certainly against Mississippi State last year, the trick play where he was able to turn it into a touchdown that really won him the game. So certainly he's a difference maker, and the more you can get the ball in his hands, the better off you're going to be.
Absolutely. And now we'll move on to the tight end position. And you know, pretty simple here for the spring is, you know, three seniors on the way out. You know, there seems to be the most excitement around Kyle Pitts this spring and what he can do. But, you know, as we have to wait until fall for Keon Zipper to get on the field. But Pitts is more in that receiver mold at tight end instead of a blocker. But we know Mullen likes those type of mismatches, you know, especially with 6'6" size that Pitts brings. So how well can he block will determine just how much he sees the field. Lucas Kroll can throw a pretty pass to Felipe Franks, but, you know, he also looks like a mismatch. You know, this is the time for him to really show what he can do. Come in the fall late last year after playing baseball. So, you know, it's going to take time to get adjusted for Lucas Kroll. And I don't think it can be stated enough, and I think I remember going back and saying when he committed to Florida that it was going to be an adjustment period. So this may be the time of year where we get to see somebody like Kroll come around now that he has a year of adjustment under his belt to get there. So I think you can really see a lot of potential at tight end. Kamori Gamble has the blocking part of it. Can he become a guy who can maybe be more relied on in the passing game? But he's a tight end right now that will be, you know, blocking and certain short yard situations, goal line situations, you know, also in there when they want to get the run game going. Dante Lang also has a chance to prove himself in the spring, but we just haven't seen much from him. So issue there, Will, is the type of players that you're looking at here is there might be a little predictability in how these tight ends are, unless one of them can become a well-rounded tight end. You know, I do know one thing though. I'm ready to see a tight end take an inside shovel pass again.
Well, we saw one last year in that first game, sort of in the tip of the cap to all the Gator fans, and then never saw it again. But you know, it's an interesting point. I mean, Pitts was outside pretty mm-hmm. much all of it. I mean, he had that slant route. That was really all I can really remember them throwing to him. You know, and Ciante Lewis and Morrell Stevens, as much as they were limited, they were part of the offensive line that came back with a lot of continuity last year. And I think this is maybe one of the hidden things when you look at what Florida has to replace on offense this year, is not only do they have to replace four starters on the offensive line, but now they got to replace those blocking guys at tight end. And, you know, Pitts did not do a whole lot of that last year. Gamble, you mentioned he's a little bit more of a blocker, but he wasn't the starter. So again, if you look at your actual line and what you're going to have to do to block, you know, that's the area where I think the tight ends can be of concern. I mean, you obviously would love to have Pitts out there, but if he can't block effectively, then it's sort of like the running backs, you can't pass protect, right? You can't get on the field except for in specified packages. So, you know, Kroll's development may be key here. If he's got the size to really present problems a lot like Gronkowski does for the Patriots, right? I mean, Gronk can go in there and he can block and he can block and he can block. And then all of a sudden they, you know, in the Super Bowl was a perfect example. He sort of chipped the guy on the edge and then ran a little wheel route. And that's what got the Patriots going in that fourth quarter. Kroll has that kind of size and ability. The question is he going to be able to do it consistently enough over the long haul? And so, you know, I think anytime you're talking about line play and blocking, you talk about continuity, and the tight ends are a big part of that. And so Florida doesn't just have to replace that on the offensive line. They have to replace the tight end too.
And not only that, you know, Ciante Lewis, kind of, he was a leader on the team as well. Kind of, you know, all the time that he had been at Florida. The coaching change and under, you know, from McElwain to Mullen. And yeah, I remember the locker room speech after the Peach Bowl. And Mullen gave his speech, and Deontay Lewis was one of the first players to kind of speak up. And speaking, he was ready to quit football, wasn't even going to play this past season. And, you know, Dan Mullen sold him on playing. But the way he was bringing about a change in culture there, Deontay Lewis, you know, for, you know, what, no eye popping stats, you know, had some good plays last year, but you know, really key in blocks in the run game, like you mentioned. And but there was a lot of leadership there. You know, there was the off field issue, of course, with the frying pan before the season. Everything kind of calmed down from that. But Deontay Lewis was also a pretty good leader that a lot of guys really looked up to last year.
Yeah, and that's something that, you know, I'm sure we'll get into when we talk about the defense next week. But, you know, they're the guys on the offensive line. I mean, guys like Martez Ivey, who were seniors who came back for their senior year. Juwan Taylor obviously playing very well at right guard. And then Lewis at sort of a tight end who's been in those trenches for the last 3 or 4 years. You know, they don't have that experience anymore, and experience counts for a lot, especially in the SEC, especially up front. And, you know, really, when you look at the offense, I mean, we can talk about who's going to be the second running back or who's going to be the fourth wide receiver. You know, those are relatively minor issues. When you start talking about leadership and tight end and continuity up front, that's really where you start to say, okay, this is the place where Florida's going to have to really show something in both the spring and heading into the year.
Will. It's time. Biggest question on the roster. It's can't be stressed enough. We saw how much this, you know, offensive line improved from game one to game 12 last year. I remember going back to the second game of the season against Kentucky, and it looked like the same old offensive line. And you know what a. And even going back to the Peach Bowl, I remember you and I kind of texting back and forth, and it was like, oh man, this Florida Michigan game started just like the last one did. But you know, that was just a little blip in the radar. That Kentucky game was a little blip on the radar, and just the beginning of that Michigan game kind of the same way there. But the offensive line really come a long way, but loses four of those five guys who started. You know, but not only is it about finding four new starters, but you kind of find some depth now too. With the four guys that you lost. So you know, kind of a trickle down effect here. You know, we spoke on it last week about, you know, how it's, you know, perfect timing for a highly rated recruit, Richard Garage, to find his way at one of the tackle spots, along with Stone Forsythe, who I think is probably going to be at one of the other ones. Those two, I think, get the first crack at trying to replace Martez Ivey and Juwan Taylor. And they don't go with experience to kind of, you know, fill in, you know, two more spots. If you think about it, you can really say while Florida has to replace four starters, you know, Brett Hege as one of those replacements, it's really like having to only replace three because of his experience and versatility and the playing time that he's got in the last 2 years. Now he has got to stay healthy, but him probably at left guard and Nick Buchanan at center, I think it's the way it starts, and it gives you some experience to start with those two. Now, you know, who has the best chance at cracking that right guard spot? Is it Noah Banks, who can probably play multiple positions on the offensive line? Can he get on the field this spring after dealing with an injury? So we'll kind of see his prognosis as we go forward. Chris Bleich is another young guy that will get an opportunity. But it's also time for guys that are older to come in and prove themselves, like TJ Moore, who can fit into the tackle rotation with Gene DeLance. So, you know, this is a position grouping that has to come together fast this spring, and hope some sort of rotation is figured out in the spring to kind of move forward in the fall camp so that rotation can get all the reps going in the fall camp. So, of course, in order for this offense to take the next step, in order for Felipe Franks to progress, in order for this run game to build off last year's late season success, you know, this offensive line is the group that's instrumental in all that and coming together. So it's a huge key to the season and maybe just how far the Gators can go.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting to see. I mean, you mentioned injuries. I think that's going to be something that's pretty key, both in the spring and in the fall. You know, so really the starting offensive line pretty much was the starting offensive line all last year. I think a lot of that had to do why the line played so much better last year and certainly was playing very, very strongly at the end. Buchanan did a really nice job stepping in and playing center. I do wonder whether he can maybe slide over to guard. I'm not sure whether he has that capability, but if he can slide over to guard, you know, both Hevesy and Mullen were very high on Graham McDowell. He was a commit at Mississippi State, who then, when Mullen came to Florida, decided to commit to Florida and is a center prospect. So, you know, if McDowell can slide in there at center and then you can move Buchanan to one of the guards, maybe that gives you some depth that you wouldn't have had otherwise. Certainly, if you've got two guys who can play center, that's important just in case one of them goes down so you can actually get the shotgun snap to the guy who's back there. I'm really interested to see how well Garage plays. I mean, he's somebody who I expected to see play a little bit last year, and we didn't necessarily see that at all. And then obviously you've got the freshman. I mean, it's not a secret that Florida's offensive line has a lot of turnover. There's a reason there were seven recruits and four of them blue chips coming in this 2019 cycle. So you got Ogwokwan, you got Tarkeen, you got Herod, you got White here in the spring, and then you got Hammond, Wilson, and Simons coming in the fall. I think the reality is just like everywhere else. I mean, it's going to be a competition and the best guy's going to play, but I think there's really some opportunity here for some of the freshmen, especially the guys who are early enrollees, to probably make an impact early on and push for even starting jobs, just because, you know, it's not as if the guys who are stepping in now have necessarily logged a whole lot of time in those games. I mean, some mop-up duty and different things like that, but there wasn't really any mop-up duty till last year. So, it's not as if those guys have a whole lot of game minutes. And so I do think there's going to be an opportunity for some of those freshmen to step in. So I think, you look at where are the guys actually playing on the line, the guys who played last year, are they sort of moving around a little bit? Heggie obviously has played a lot of guard. Where do you put him? Then you got Banks and Blythe, sort of the guys that they brought in last year. But I'd really key in on McDowell. I think McDowell maybe is the, at least in the spring, sort of the key to telling you what's going on. Because if McDowell can step in and play, then I think that sort of opens things up.
I'm glad you brought him up. Yeah, Griffin McDowell is not a name I really even, I really did just kind of go over saying, I remember liking him, as you said, just because the coaching staff was really high on him as well. The guy to really look out for there. It's just, going back to leadership as well, we were going with Ziante Lewis and Martez Ivy, was picked to go to SEC Media Day, so with Dan Mullen, and not necessarily the big outspoken type of player, really quiet, but didn't live up to the five-star billing that he was recruited into, but replacing him and Taylor at those tackled spots. I mean, I think you know the two guys you want there. Like I said, I think Garage and Forsyth are your two guys. But would Miami be in game one? And, yes, they struggled mightily last season. But they're going to bring athletes. They're going to bring an athletic front seven. Really shoring up those two tackle spots before you get to that game really starts this spring. And also, we know this offense wants to be built on running the ball. We saw it when this offense was at its best. They were able to run the ball, especially between the tackles. So while those running backs deserve a lot of credit, the inside of that line is really going to have to come together pretty fast.
Yeah, though, one of the nice things is about the schedule next year, at least, the Miami games in Orlando, they can't even get the guys to go to the stadium in Miami. So you figure that's going to be a pretty friendly crowd for Florida. And then you got UT Martin. You do have to go to Kentucky, but again, that's not necessarily the loudest place in the SEC. And then you get Tennessee at home, Towson at home, and Auburn at home. So really, you then have to go to Baton Rouge, which obviously is going to be a pretty loud and raucous environment. But at the same time, at that point, you got five or six games under your belt. So if they can get past sort of that initial hump, and obviously the Miami game is going to tell us a lot, but if you can get past that initial hump, it's not as if there's a whole lot of road games early like there were last year, right? I mean, at Tennessee, at Mississippi State, those very early road games where you thought maybe the offensive line might struggle, and they actually played very, very well in those games. So, there's a little bit of time to break these guys in, and certainly I think we'll see that. But I really do sort of think that some of these freshmen are going to have an opportunity, and I think it'll be interesting to see, especially in the spring, how much time they actually get and whether they're in that rotation, whether they're sort of mixing and matching still, or whether Mullen and Hevesy have decided, hey, these are our guys that we're going to go with, and everybody's sort of the backups from there.
I think that is the key. If they can identify their five and who they want to fill them in with, that's pretty key in how fast this offensive line can grow, especially in the fall. So, Will, before we wrap it up here, we just mentioned the Miami game, and I think a pretty hot topic of the movement of this game, or the date movement, and when this game could be played. And of course, I don't think you've missed it out there, but if you have, there is some waiting basically on an NCAA word now that if this Florida-Miami game will get moved up a week. So, you know, spring practice is about to kick off, but a lot of the talk is of this Miami game, especially late last week. Get our thoughts on it, because, you know, it was Gator Nation's pretty split on this. I remember I posted a poll, and a lot more, I think it was 53% were in favor of moving the game a week earlier, the Saturday before. So it would be August 24th. And just like I said, waiting on the NCAA to approve this, because ESPN came to both schools and to kick off the 150 years of college football, ESPN pegged Florida-Miami to be the game that they wanted to do that with. They went to both schools in December there, and both schools are interested in moving it. And it's really just in the NCAA hands now. And if they approve it, you can best bet the game's going to be moved to August 24th. So we'll, of course, a lot of people having to rearrange travel plans, vacation plans, moving it from a 3-day weekend for Labor Day weekend. This is a pretty unique story here in Gator Nation.
Yeah, I mean, I empathize with people who've already bought tickets or already bought plane tickets, or you know, have already sort of arranged their lives around a schedule that was released, you know, late last year, and now, you know, things are being changed. It's a little bit annoying that they sort of knew that they were going to be doing, at least requesting this in December. Because even if they just sort of said, hey, hold off for a second, don't do all your reservations first. Though I know they don't want to do that because they want to make sure that they maximize the revenue that they're getting out of this. I mean, and that's really what this boils down to, right? Is it's great exposure for the university. I'm sure they get paid extra for doing it. You know, so you can't simultaneously complain about facilities and different things like that and then say, oh, you can't move this game. But I certainly empathize with people who've already planned, and I think there's certainly room for improvement in terms of the way that they did this. It's not as if they didn't know that it was the 150th anniversary, you know, 2 years ago. These are the kinds of things you tend to figure they plan more than a year ahead of time. And the fact that they're just making this change now is a little bit annoying. But, you know, we'll all be glued to the TV, I'm sure, those of us who aren't going. And you know, even if I'm at a lake house or something, I'll make sure I'm at a bar if I can't get reception, because I'm not missing the opening game against Miami. And I think most Gator fans are like that. So it's a little bit inconvenient, but it's also going to be kind of cool, right? To be on the stage, and especially because of, you know, I think Florida's going to be favored pretty obviously. I think we expect Florida to come out and put up an impressive performance. And when you get to do that with everybody watching in the eyes of every high school kid in Florida watching that game, I mean, it's a big deal for them to come out and have an impressive showing and be able to look at a kid across the table when you're going to recruit him and say, you know, look at what we just did to Miami. And if it gives you that ability, then hey, it's important.
Yeah, I think it's important also to note that, you know, this wasn't originally Florida Miami's idea. It was the ESPN that sparked the conversation and got it going. But yeah, you know, sign me up for the game being a week earlier. You know, fall camp will start a week earlier. The game will get a week earlier. Florida won't get any extra number of practices out of it. They just move everything up to get three bye weeks. So I think it kind of helps the season as well when you look at it. You know, this is one of the weird years where the calendar falls where teams are getting two bye weeks anyway. But if Florida was able to move this game a week up earlier, then they would have three bye weeks, as they would have a bye week, basically the opening weekend of college football when everybody else is playing. So, Will, there's a kind of a built-in advantage to moving the game up as well.
Oh, man, there's definitely an advantage, especially with what we just talked about with the offensive line. You know, all of a sudden you play Miami, there are going to be breakdowns. There are going to be things that need to be improved on. You know, again, it's a matter of expectations. Like, you can't expect Franks to remain clean in that game, because there's going to be somebody on the offensive line who screws something up. And, you know, there may even be a line check that gets screwed up by the quarterback because he's still learning in the system. So, you know, there's going to be some things they need to clean up, and they have a full week to do that. And then they have a cupcake after that to sort of lick their wounds. And then you're really sort of heading into the teeth of the schedule. And, you know, attrition in the SEC is always an issue. I think the more bye weeks you get, the more talented team is going to show up and win the game. I think when you get sort of nicked, that's when the talent starts to become a little bit more less important, because each team's nicked, and you know, you don't necessarily get the best performance out of everybody. So, you know, those extra bye weeks are going to be important. And I think having three of them in the season, it's going to be a little bit annoying as fans, right? You just sort of start and stop. But, you know, we'll have to find stuff to talk about in the off weeks, which, you know, knowing Gator Nation, that probably won't be a problem. Something will pop up. But,
but I think I can fathom talking about Florida beating Miami for 2 weeks.
Well, we'll have to have somebody from Miami on in between. Get them to agree to it before the game. And but I suppose that means you have to have them on if you lose too. But but anyway, no. I mean, I think that sort of, an extra bye week is always a good thing. There's a lot of evidence when you look at how teams perform coming off of bye weeks, they perform a lot better. A lot of that has to do with, because the bye week is usually 6 or 7 games into the season, and it gives you an opportunity to get healthy. And but again, there's probably going to be some injuries coming out of that Miami game, and 2 weeks to heal up will be a good thing.
Yeah, absolutely. So Will, thanks for joining us here while we break down the offense for spring practice. Next week we'll do the defense, where had to replace a whole lot of playmakers, from Chauncey Gardner Johnson, Ja'Kai Polite, and CC Jefferson, replacing those guys. And we'll take a look at what the Gators have to do there.
Yeah, but they don't have to replace the defensive coordinator. So again, continuity, I think, does sort of reign here. And I look forward to talking about it and sort of looking at what we should be looking for in the spring practices and the spring game. And, you know, I'm looking forward to talking about that next week.
All right, it's Will Miles. You can find him on Twitter at WillMilesSEC and his site, readandreaction.com. I'm the host of Gators Breakdown, David Waters, and you can find me on Twitter at GatorDave_SEC. Guys and girls out there, thanks for listening to this episode of Gators Breakdown.